This is Kelly Blewett. I am joined tonight in the studio by Jacqueline Woodson, the best-selling author of more than 24 award-winning books, including the New York Times best-selling memoir, Brown Girl Dreaming, which won the 2014 National Book Award, the Coretta Scott King Award, a Newbery Honor Award, an NAACP Image Award, and the Seibert Honor Award. Woodson was recently named the Young People's Poet Laureate by the Poetry Foundation. She lives in Brooklyn with her family, and she's here today to discuss her new novel, Another Brooklyn, which has just been shortlisted for the 2016 National Book Award in the fiction category. Welcome, Jacqueline.
Oh, thanks, Kelly. It's great to be here.
So tell us a little bit about Another Brooklyn.
It's a novel that's overlaying a biography. It's the biography of Bushwick during the period that I'm writing, which is in the 1970s, but I dedicated to Bushwick from 1970 to 1990 before the neighborhood started really changing. And it was the neighborhood I grew up in. So I wanted to put that neighborhood on the page as it really existed, but then I wanted to create a narrative over it. And that's the story of the four girls who exist in Another Brooklyn.
Yes. And as you said, the book is dedicated to the neighborhood. Mm-hmm. What was happening in that neighborhood during that time?
In the 1970s, it's interesting because it was so alive. It was changing. The people were coming in through the Great Migration. African Americans were coming in, and Latino and Hispanics were coming in through immigration, and white people were moving out of the neighborhood. So it was white flight and a changing neighborhood. People were coming back from Vietnam. The blackout happened. But it was a neighborhood that was alive and had all of this energy to it, especially for me as a young person living in it.
So how do you sort of set the stage in Brooklyn? Can you tell us about who your characters are and what they're up to?
The story is being told by August, who has come back to the neighborhood. She's gone off and went to an Ivy League school, went to grad school, became an anthropologist, and comes back into the neighborhood and runs into one of her best friends from childhood. And it kind of sets the stage for her looking back on that period in her life. And the story revolves around August and those three best friends, Sylvia, Angela, and Gigi. And they're coming to adulthood in this neighborhood.
You write in the afterword that this is a book that made you think about your friends that you had growing up, and that in some part it's about the slow motion ferocity of the end of childhood. And I wondered if you could kind of walk us through slow motion ferocity of the end of childhood. It's just such a beautiful line.
Oh, thank you. It just is how I remember childhood. You're a child and then you're not. And suddenly there are all these expectations that you're not ready for because you've spent your life a child. And then you're an adult or you're moving into adulthood, or in the case of these girls and all girls in our society, your growing up is very visible to the world. Your physical coming into adulthood is very visible in this way that you're not ready for. So I really wanted to spend some time unpacking that, but also the idea that there are expectations put on children long before they're ready for those expectations. So that's the ferocity of it. And so looking back on it, you can begin to look at it from this place where you can watch it move slower than when you're in it and it feels like it's just boom, gone.
I wonder if maybe you could read just a short passage from the novel to us that kind of gets at the transition of August and her friends from childhood into adolescence. And it seems like their alliance with each other becomes really, really important at that time in their lives.
Yeah, they realize that they were kind of building a wall themselves against the world. And so this is August. The world was ending. We had been girls, wobbling around the apartment in Gigi's mother's white go-go boots. And then, and then, and then. Little pieces of Brooklyn began to fall away, revealing us. We envied each other's hair, eyes, butts, noses. We traded clothes and shared sandwiches. Some days we laughed until soda sprayed from our noses and hiccups erupted in our chest. When boys called our names, we said, "Don't even say my name. Don't even put it in your mouth." When they said, "You ugly anyway," we knew they were lying. When they hollered, "Conceited," we said, "Nope, convinced." We watched them dip walk away, too young to know how to respond. The four of us weren't something they understood. They understood girls alone. folding their arms across their breast, praying for invisibility.
That is such a striking passage about gender and friendship and sexuality. What stands out about that to you?
I think it's at once hysterical and heartbreaking, right? Because here are these four girls who know they're beautiful, right? They wouldn't get this kind of attention, or maybe they would if the world wasn't just so paying attention to how they were walking through the world. And they knew the fragility of themselves in the world, especially when they didn't have each other around them kind of protecting them. So all of that is on the page. And then the whole thing about that image of them being kids and playing around in these very adult boots, right? Mm-hmm. White go-go boots. And I remember as a kid, white go-go boots were one of the things that were in style, even for little girls. But there was always this kind of perversity to it, because when you think of go-go dances and when you think of what those boots are representing, to see a child in them. And I had a pair, you know, mm-hmm. I wanted them as much as the next kid. But looking back on that and looking back on these girls trying on their mother's clothes and trying to play act being women, at the same time not ready to be women, wanting to keep on playing, but here they are in this world where they're not allowed to play too long.
I mean, this is a triumphant moment for these girls that they can kind of hold the boys back,
mm-hmm.
but that can't be really maintained.
It can't. And also the interesting thing for me in this passage was the fact that they knew their power and they knew the boys' powerlessness. You know, they knew where the boys didn't have their power and they knew how to get in there and say, you know, I have power over my name. Don't even put it in your mouth. And the boys like, wait. So that kind of moment of being a girl empowered is also very fragile.
Yeah. Early in the book, you write that the girls carry around being a girl in Brooklyn as though it's a bag that they have to pass around.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I love that.
Yeah. Saying, here, help me carry this, which is about friendship too, right? I think the thing that's so important about friendship is the people in your life do help you carry the weight of that living, whether it's helping through childcare or helping when you get a book into the world or helping when you need someone to talk to who you can really trust. Those are all the different bags of stones that we carry. And for these girls, they were able to get into a room together and know that they deeply trusted one another and that they were safe.
One of the folks who endorsed your book said that it was almost like a combination of grief and friendship.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was pretty insightful. We've been talking about the friendship angle and how great it was for these girls to have each other and that they did. And I think August, too, recognized the power of those girls from afar. She wanted to be with those girls and she got it.
Mm-hmm.
But there is grief also sewn into this story.
Yeah, I love that blurb. I think it is what growing up is, right? When you think of the little deaths in our lives, the one that is the end of childhood, the end of adolescence, the end of young adulthood. But at the same time, August is struggling with the loss of her mom. First, just the physical loss. And then as we get deeper in the book, we know that something else is going on with that. So there is this grieving that's going on through the book, which becomes the reason why August becomes an anthropologist, right? She realizes she spent her childhood studying death from this distance, and now she knows what to do with what she's carried and what she's learned from her childhood.
And she's an anthropologist who sort of focuses
mm-hmm.
on how other cultures handle death. Was that interesting to research? I mean, there's all these moments in the book where that comes in, these really jarring traditions that also are really resonant.
Yeah, and it was fascinating. I remember hearing a writer say that sometimes a story knows more than you do about what it's trying to say. And I felt that way again and again with Another Brooklyn, especially as I was researching the different rituals of death and dying and seeing where what I had just written, here's one ritual that fits perfectly in this moment. Here's another one that fits well here because I'm talking about young children and we're talking mm-hmm. about the culture in Africa where they dig a grave when the child is born. So pieces began to fall into place. I mean, not without a ton of rewriting,
yeah.
but it really was fascinating to gather this information because I didn't know about so many of those rituals.
I just have to ask you about the tone of the book. I mean, it's been described as hallucinatory or a fever dream. And I wondered how you kind of entered into this space linguistically to create a mood.
I really wanted to marry poetry and the narrative. And everything I write, I read out loud. It has to sound a certain way. It has to look a certain way on the page. I really use the white space very intentionally to have the reader pause or go back and reread what they just written so that it can sink in really deeply. And so I think making the reader slow down really created that dreamlike narrative, and also being really clear about what the words I put on the page that move the reader from one moment to the next. And also the fact that August is looking back. So she says again and again, this is memory, and memory is gauzy that way.
Well, thank you so much for coming and talking with us.
Thank you, Kelly.
I've been talking with Jacqueline Woodson, the author of more than 24 books, including her new one, Another Brooklyn, which has been nominated for a 2016 National Book Award. For more information on this book, visit our website at wvxu.org/aroundcincinnati. This is Kelly Blewett.